Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode. So glad you're tuning in. Well, we are 2 weeks into 2020, and I hope you're making a ruckus wherever you are. Before we jump into the episode, I wanted to share two opportunities for any of you that might be looking to take the next step and connect with others like you. So first, in late February, I'll be hosting a virtual town hall to connect educators and professionals outside the education system who are passionate about contributing to education innovation. It's going to be an inspiring hour of possibility-focused conversations, questions you always wanted answers to, and connection for ongoing collaboration. It's going to be a free event, but space will be limited. So if you're interested, go to offtheassemblyline.co, scroll to the form at the bottom, and let me know you're interested in the town hall. The second opportunity is to get connected with an incredible tribe of education innovators in the Teacher Mastermind. Mastermind cohorts meet bi-weekly to help each other level up and collaborate to make audacious goals happen. We're opening up new cohorts in February, so if you're interested in becoming a part of the community, head to teachermastermind.com to apply. Okay, I am excited to bring you the second episode of our Mindfulness Education mini-series today. I'm talking with Stacy Sims, the creator of Mindful Music Moments, a dynamic program that leverages the universal mechanism of school morning announcements to provide mindfulness moments for students, teachers, and school staff. Just imagine an entire school slowing down, turning inward, and being guided through a mindfulness prompt delivered through world-class classical music. And all at the same time. You can almost feel how powerful the impact would be. Mindful Music Moments has been featured on PBS NewsHour and has touched over 50,000 K-12 students to date. Today, Stacy unpacks just what makes this program so powerful and how educators can begin to practice some of the most effective elements right now. Let's get into it. So, Stacy, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, before the show started, we were talking a little bit about your journey and what has brought you to the point you're at currently. And I wondered if, you know, for our listeners, you could give just a quick snapshot of that journey.
Yes. I always have to take a little pause to condense the narrative. But I would say, in short, I am now 58 years old, grew up in the Midwest, with a lot of privileges, white, middle class, able-bodied, able-mind, well-intentioned parents, no major obstacles except those that I started to kind of cultivate for myself. So to make a long story short, my inability to be able to just sort of manage stress. I took on a few activities that felt useful at the time, became not useful. So by my late 30s, I discovered I had become clearly alcoholic and panic disordered, and became clear that it was not how I wanted to continue to be in the world. And I got sober and started Pilates, a movement practice, in about the same week. And so I became deeply fascinated over these last 20 years in both unwellness and wellness, and how far off one can get from their best self, and how the mind can tell stories that one believes to be true when they really are at the service of anxiety or depression or addiction. And then being sober allowed me to start deepening my own appreciation for human stories, human experiences. And the second half of my life and career has really been dedicated to researching, understanding, sharing, and creating programs and activities that allow individuals to drop into a space of calm, focus, regulation, and reciprocity.
And so when did you first have the idea for Mindful Music Moments? What brought you into, what brought your work and your programs into the schools?
So there's this wonderful school in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's a Cincinnati public school. It's called the Academy of World Languages. And it's a K through 8 school, magnet school, that teaches world languages. So Russian, Chinese, English, and the English is serving around 50% of the students are English as second language refugees and immigrants representing up to 30 different countries at a time. So it's a wonderful, wonderful, diverse school. And I have a strong relationship with them. And I got to do a pilot program for 7th and 8th grade students who are a part of a program, I think it was called SIF, Students with Interrupted Formal Education. So these were students who had lost education time due to their refugee issues or other issues, perhaps medical. And so they had a culture, an extra bell every day in the morning that allowed them to catch up academically, social, emotionally, culturally. So what is American baseball? You know, all kinds of things. So I was able to take that, a friend of mine, Ashley, and I were able to spend 10 weeks with these students every day doing mindfulness, movement, social, emotional learning. It was amazing, as it would be for anyone who got to spend that much time in a school day. I knew for sure that that was not replicable in any other place. And, you know, I feel like kindergartners have like 20 minutes, 10 minutes for lunch. They don't even have time to open their juice boxes and move from place to place. So I knew I couldn't spend that much time, but every day I was there, I heard the morning announcements. I was there in the morning. So it occurred to me that that could be a bandwidth, kind of an unowned bandwidth for something that would be for all. So in the PBIS language, a tier one strategy, where the entire school would take a moment to calm and focus. And Cincinnati is a very healthy arts community, and I've worked in the arts in different capacities over the years, and I'm a big fan of collaboration. So I reached out to the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and said, what if we combined a mindfulness prompts of noticing and regulating breath and regulating pulse and listening and imagination with classical music? And they said, ooh, that's cool. And I asked the school, and the school, they have a wonderful, strong principal. But as all the educators know, it's really difficult unless you have buy-in from staff. So the staff voted unanimously to pilot it. So we began the pilot in January of 2016 at one school. And at that time, I would go in every morning and read a prompt and then play a piece of music. Then it turned out that pretty instantly it was awesome. And then I started to figure out a way that schools could do it without a human being from Mindful Music being there every day. So now we serve, I think, 160 plus schools every day nationally through a web-based private system where if an educator logs in, they have audio files that are pre-recorded with both mindfulness and music in alignment with symphonies and operas in the city nearest them.
That's awesome. And, you know, I saw the PBS NewsHour special on it, and it was so compelling and so moving to listen to these students talk about the experience they were having with these mindful music moments. And I mean, I have a slew of questions, and I'm, you know, thinking about where we go next, but maybe let's start with that. Let's start with the impact you're seeing for students. What is it, in a very tangible sense, that these moments are doing for students?
A couple of things. One, I really do believe that the busyness of our world and a lot of stressors that we could easily begin to talk about poverty, addiction, polarized viewpoints, whatever it might be, coupled with the sort of yet to be discovered, the full impact of the being in a digital world. So I feel as though the children who are entering schools, these digital natives, it's not just their own time online, but it's also the lack of attunement time they may be getting from a distracted parent who's on their own digital device. I feel like what we're seeing with kids coming into school is that they don't often have even a baseline physiological sense, felt sense, embodied sense of what it feels like to be calm and focused. If you start to dig in a little bit to anybody who's in the mindfulness territory or the folks who are starting to talk about some of the challenges with the digital diet, is that it's essentially creating the same sort of physiology within the body as fear. There's an agitation. It's all this sympathetic nervous system arousal. And what's missing for many of us is the parasympathetic release, the balance. And that's the exhale. That's the rest, digest, and integrate. So I feel like first and foremost, what we're serving children and adults as we do this 4-minute-ish ritual every morning. So it's 3 minutes of music plus a mindfulness prompt. The same piece of music repeats for 1 week with slightly different prompts. We're providing a way for them to have an experience which they get a prompt, but they also have agency over their own experience. It's their time to imagine, breathe, whatever they need to do in that moment in time to prepare for the day. So I think first and foremost, we're creating the capacity to have a felt sense understanding of what calm, focused feels like, as well as to be able to see representation. So whether that's a teacher at the front of the classroom, whether that's me, if I get to visit people, when the children see someone who is very in their body, very still, very focused, very calm, it's mind blowing. We just don't have the same. What I always try to share with individuals is that to think of like, well, I used to, or we used to, or in our classroom, it's not apples to apples. And I don't think that any of us really know the long-term outcome of just having so much screen time and less attunement attachment time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of what you're describing with the program, it really mirrors good educational instruction too, right? Like the environment is being built, then the skill, the knowledge, the experience is being modeled, and then students are given opportunities for increased autonomy and choice and exercise over their own experience. I'm curious, the aspect of choice for these students, the aspect of giving them the power to build this tool set for themselves. How important is that? What's the impact of giving them the, I mean, it sounds like a small piece of the puzzle, but I really think it's quite significant. What's the power of choice there for students?
Well, I think it's so exciting. I can remember almost to a moment in a classroom and the places and spaces where as a young person, I was asked how I felt about something. And my impression of it was honored by an adult or another person. So to be, and what's so cool about using the music as an anchor is that we have this, we're having a shared experience. And it's so fun. Oftentimes after mindful music, someone will go like, okay, let's open your books, time for math. but I sit in a lot of classrooms where it might be used as part of the morning meeting. And so if you played a piece of music and into what did this make you think of, what you hear from everyone is so fascinating, and there's no way it can be wrong. Hmm. So having agency over noticing and expressing your own thoughts and feelings, and then getting to listen to other thoughts and feelings is really fantastic social emotional attuning. So I think that is really spectacular. I also feel like, you know, as you know, with these children, many of our children are going through things. We never know what a human being has weathered in the moment we meet them. Mm. And so when, you know, 500 children show up for a school and 120 teachers and paraprofessionals show up to serve them, like if you could map out all of the chaos and sadness and cry, you know, there's so much happening in everyone's lives. But to just be able to take a moment in transition to be able to say, this is a moment for you to breathe, for you to feel at ease, for you to be given a prompt of perhaps think about this, perhaps notice your breath. But you can do whatever you want in these 4 minutes. They're yours to gather yourself. That's really powerful. Mm-hmm. I tell young boys and girls too, I'll say, I don't care if you think about Fortnite, let's just be quiet. And so what happens is that mindfulness, oftentimes we feel as though, well, I can't meditate because my thoughts are always ... I can't stop thinking. But in fact, you're really just beginning to calm your nervous system, create a ritual where you can actually notice your thoughts. There's nothing right or wrong about having thoughts, but you get to practice over time just an appreciation for, I have to give more treats to these dogs.
That's okay.
It might be, you know, once we encounter ourselves daily in some sort of contemplative practice, we start to notice different kinds of patterns. And that's where mastery begins to live.
So I'd love to go behind the curtain a little bit and just talk even broadly about the science of brain development and the relationship to this combination of music mindfulness. And, you know, we're learning more and more, about the science of brain development, about cognitive development, about, you know, neurology more than we ever have before. We're seeing that the limbic system has a huge impact on how the executive center of the brain functions. And so, you know, the emotional state of students really does have a huge impact on their learning. Can you take us behind the curtain just a little bit and talk about, you know, what's maybe happening in the brain for students and even what impact this might have academically speaking?
Yes. So when I get to chat with teachers and anyone who'll listen, what we talk about is that, and there's all kinds of wonderful, as you said, there's so much research and so much wonderful modeling these days. But we look at the idea that all humans, when we're born, if we're lucky, that in the base of the brain, the brainstem, our most primitive part of our brain, is still functioning in large part the way it functioned thousands of years ago and in our kind of our animal body, which is a really survival-based system. And a lot of our activities as humans, whether we're aware of it or not, is really designed is for survival. So that is the breath, digestion, all the processes of the body, as well as the fight or flight, like the survival impulse, is all in the brainstem. So hopefully those things are alive and well in us. It's not like we want to turn those things off. We really don't. We just don't want them to be on hyperdrive. The next part, that limbic system that you're referring to, the midbrain, is really where I consider it the sort of the blueprint of resilience and the blueprint of social emotional capacity. That importantly, research shows that that's the part of the brain that develops between the ages of 0 and 5. And in large part, it is developing in relationship to your primary caregiver, often mom. But it's really where that attunement piece happens. And as you were talking about or alluded to earlier, is that if you're in sort of crisis mode in that early attachment, if you don't feel fundamentally safe, you haven't learned how to feel safe in multiple environments and in your own skin and in your own home, then that's not going to allow the frontal lobes that where the more cognitive higher functions exist, but not just like 1 + 1 or 7 × 6, but also compassion, empathy, and choice making. If we're in our triggery space of feeling unsafe socially, unsafe morally, unsafe physically, unsafe mentally, then those other parts of the brain are going to have a lot of difficulty turning on. And there's this really nice slide that perhaps we can share somehow with your folks. I use a lot, which just shows two triangles. And it really talks about that when you have adequate development of a young child, that if you think of a triangle with the point at the bottom, the top, the largest width of the triangle would be higher cognitive functioning. The second most space would be for social emotional learning. A little bit less would be dedicated to the energy regulation in the body, and then the littlest piece on the bottom is about survival. So our whole being, not just our mind, but every cell in our body is dedicated to these forces and factors. When you have trauma and when you have chronic stress, which kind of lay in the body and the physiology the same way, the triangle is inverted. So if you see a child who's a runner or you see a child who's practically asleep, they're the most part of their being is dedicated to the sense of energy regulation and survival. And there's very little bandwidth for social emotional capacity and even less for more complex functions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great picture. So, you know, something like mindful music moments enters the scene. And let's say that a student does have that inverted triangle where the base is much larger than we really want it to be. What then happens if, you know, using that picture, when they have a chance to sit down, to listen to these classical pieces, to work through a prompt, and to make those choices in that 4-minute time period, what would that picture look like? What's happening there?
What happens is that when we create a sense of ritual, safety, engagement, what happens is that the autonomic nervous system starts to rebalance so that the inhale and the exhale are the same, that there's a return to sort of systemic homeostasis. And there's a gazillion ways to create that kind of ease. So activity, being in nature, meditation and mindfulness are forms that have really needed to be inserted into the system. They're amazingly powerful and can create tremendous additional mastery. But a lot of our, you know, activities of just sort of boredom or laying around reflecting on what we're thinking about, we just don't have those in our lives anymore. So what's starting to happen with the mindful music is you're allowing the system of the brain, the body, to rebalance itself so that then the activities of connection are going to be easier because there's not going to be that triggery place. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like step one in the scaffold. The other thing that's really great is that, as you know, and anybody who's spent time in the classroom or has had a teacher that changed their life or a mentor of some sort, one of the things that helps probably rebalance the nervous system the fastest is meaningful human interaction. You know, really holding space for someone, resonating with someone, seeing them. And mindful music is a simple tool to have a shared experience, to get everybody in the exhale space, so that when a student is having an interaction with someone else, you're coming at it from the same note. And it's this down-regulation of the nervous system that starts to be that really sweet spot of humanity and learning and feeling a part of something where you all get it. You don't feel like you're an outsider in some way. And I know from my own personal experience that when you start to be dysregulated or have anxiety or depression or whatever it might be, it is a very lonely space. That dysregulation alone makes you feel almost like an alien being. So anything that makes any of us feel like we have had an experience tends to be really joyous and nourishing.
Yeah, and really sets the stage for the safety that's necessary to step into deeper learning, you know, and the vulnerability that comes with that.
Yeah, and to begin to understand, to have, you know, kind of back to that embodiment, to be able to have an embodied experience of what does it feel like to have created ease in my own self.
Mm. That idea of agency again is really powerful. So what's the deal with classical music? Would instrumental hip hop be just as beneficial here? Would it be just as beneficial to be playing Enya or nature sounds or country music? Why classical?
First of all, I love collaboration and mindful music. There are schools who use it who aren't aligned with their local symphony or orchestra, but it's really cool when the playlist comes to you from the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra or the Cleveland Orchestra, you know, and you can create a relationship with that arts institution. So some of it is about this really great connectivity so that then a child goes to a concert and already knows the music and feels like a genius. There's a relationship building. So I love, love, love that. Also within the very vast canon of classical music, there's a lot of, so these are 2 to 3 minutes. 3 minutes is the main program. The preschool program is a 2 minute music piece. So a mindfulness experience is something that you want to have kind of a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have a ritual to start. You have a place to imagine and notice. And then you have a way to sort of emerge from that into something else. So classical music, you know, if you think of, a Beethoven 7th symphony or what it might be, you know, that's a lot of music to listen to find that 3 minute narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of it is sedate. Some of it's a little more complex, but it's about trying to create something that you can go on a ride with. Other kinds of music. So for me, diversity is very important, and I'm working on this with all of my music partners in the schools. And so as you can imagine, with classical music, it's a little trickier just because of who was making the music.
Mm-hmm.
And so a few times more than a few times, I've worked really hard to create selections that might be more jazz oriented or rhythm and blues oriented or even sometimes opera. And it's trying to create, first and foremost, the listening experience has to be really lovely. And it's not to say it couldn't include other forms. It just would be about creating partnerships, knowing that Mindful Music Moments is mainly serving the well-being of students sitting in a classroom at the beginning of the day. And if we can find that with country music, hip-hop music, whatever it might be, fantastic. But we would have to be really thoughtful about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, yeah, that's really interesting that you mentioned the diversity component and context. You know, there's a ton of research around the benefits of listening to classical music and really the benefits of music in general for the brain. But I love that you are, you know, very thoughtfully considering the role of diversity in the process and in your collaboration, and also for the listener as well. It's really interesting.
Well, and I got a note last year from an educator in the Cleveland area who said a few of my students says, how come there aren't any female composers? And so I said, oh my gosh, I know. And, you know, we worked on it this year, and we have Florence Price and a couple others on the playlist, and they wrote to say, you know, we were very excited for this. So it's also about, I've been really working hard with my small and wonderful team of, as we've been growing so beautifully, of just really trying to make sure that we don't move from a relational model to a transactional model. Mm. You know, just really trying to create really good relationships with our educators and our students and our parents and the arts organizations, and just trying to create a lot of breath and space and listen. And serve where we can serve, but also, you know, I think part of the challenge is that there's so many problems to solve, diversity, equity, many of those things, and I care about them deeply. Yet, I think oftentimes we can get tasked with doing things that may be outside of the scope or the part of the scaffold we're working on.
Yeah, I really understand that. There's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of great initiatives going in a lot of different areas we can jump into. But yeah, no, I really applaud you really working to maintain the focus and the foundation of the work that you're doing. For the educators listening, for the parents listening, what is one practice or one piece of game-changing knowledge that you would want to share with anyone who might be listening?
So I would say that I've been very inspired this last 6-7 months by Tristan Harris, and TristanHarris. He's a young guy. He was a Google ethicist. He's worked in Silicon Valley for quite a while, and he's now working on his own. Here's what he does. He articulates super clearly that the business models for any kind of social media company is essentially the longer we're online, the more money they make. And so the addictive property of this digital diet of ours is legit, and it is, as he refers to it, it's a race to the brainstem. Hmm. And he's so clear about it, and that I feel as though any of us who are starting to feel this sort of general lack of empowerment, this dispiritedness, this just sort of like this can't continue, I think we really, really, really need to look at our own connections to the digital world. And, you know, we're recommending all kinds of, you know, timers and things that you can start to do to limit your own, become aware of your own challenges with not being on it the whole time. So as adults, we need to become aware, because if we don't shift, our kids aren't going to shift. And then what happens is the minute you cut out all of that stuff, you're going to go back to doing things that make us feel better.
I love that you shared that, because it's absolutely not what I expected you to say, and yet it's the simplest thing and makes the most sense for getting started, you know, with mindfulness and leading students into mindfulness. Just be aware of our own practices and not only what we're taking in, but also what we're modeling. I love that.
Yeah, and I sort of feel like it's gotten to the point where for so many of us, we sort of feel like, and I know I've really had to work on this myself, because I can't really be talking the talk without walking the walk. It really is, and as a recovering person, I know how easy it is to normalize behavior that's an addiction. And we have collectively normalized this, and it is the thing that is probably contributing mightily to the rise in basically the lack of true connectedness, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation is up in younger grades. We had a second grader commit suicide in our community a few years ago. Something's got to change.
Right. Right. And it starts with us, you know, with you, with those that are listening right now. It starts with us and our practice. I love that you said we can't talk the talk without walking the walk, and that's powerful.
And on the other hand, I would say that even a 3 to 5 minute a day beginning practice for mindfulness, whether you do it on an app, whether you just sit in your backyard with your eyes closed or your eyes open, it is life changing. And you cannot do it wrong. If you are doing it, if you return and you sit down again the next day for 3 to 5 minutes and you do it the next day, no matter what your mind is focusing on, it is absolutely powerfully correct. It is the practice.
I love that. And I think so many of us need to hear that. For students in the classroom, if teachers are wanting to bring mindfulness into their room in a really accessible way, of course, they can adopt mindful music moments and, you know, and work within your program. Is there something that, you know, is a little nugget, a little practice, something they could start with in their classrooms that might be very accessible for them and for their students?
Yeah, I think that it's really thinking of sort of the classroom and life as a time sculpture, and it's really easy to make everything feel frantic. And so if whatever that when a classroom teacher basically, first of all, regulates themselves, meaning that sometimes, so if I'm at the front of the classroom and I'm starting to get agitated and I just start saying like, all right, we need to take a break. We're going to have a mindful music moments break. The children are going to regulate themselves out of my behavior. So probably I feel like sometimes the most important thing to do is for the teacher to do maybe a big inhale and an exhale, pause and say, whew, that was a crazy morning. How do you guys feel? Like, let's like get our feet on the floor. Let's sit up nice and tall. Let's take a few breaths. Let's just settle in for a second, just to honor that the teacher perhaps needs a moment, is modeling just a transition break to that, all righty, I think we're ready to go. I think it's really about the teachers finding their own way to create some little ritual in the classroom. It might be the lights are off for a minute. It might be playing a piece of music. It might be a morning meeting style check-in. It might be even a sort of let's stretch our arms to the ceiling. Let's look all around us. Let's make a funny noise, and then let's start the day. Rituals that move the mind, move the body, and rituals. Children who are stressed, children who come out of trauma have really, they don't know where they are in time and space, and future planning is very difficult for them because they don't know where they are in time and space. So creating things that happen a lot that people can count on, that they can ask for, very successful strategies.
Powerful. I felt myself just take a very nice deep breath as you were sharing all of those things. And I thought, yes, this is this is the direction to go in for sure.
And I always tell teachers that it's not, I mean, I feel like people like me stand in front of them all the time saying, oh, here's this new thing. And what I'm really trying to do is support teachers and educators to be able to say, here's, this is old school. This is why you got in this business. To be loving and caring and nurturing and nourishing. And so we're trying to just sort of give enough tools and information so that they have the time and the space to do what they already know.
Right. So good. Well, as we start to wrap up our conversation here, it's been so fantastic. I love to ask all of my guests, who are you giving an A to these days?
I'm giving an A to every teacher who still walks into a classroom every day. It's astonishing to me the job they do. Every single teacher who I meet, they for sure get an A. And I would say I also give an A to students, even if they're not performing in a way that a national test or something else might say that makes them valid. The amount of resilience and the experiences these kids are having and how they show up every day with hope in their hearts. And it's just amazing to me.
Love it. And how can people get connected with you? How can they get connected to the work you're doing? How can they bring mindful music moments into their own schools and classrooms?
It's very easy. They can go to thewell.world. So thewell.world is the website that holds the programs that I've created, including mindful music moments. We also have a really beautiful mindful poetry moments partnership with On Being for Poetry Month. And True Body Project trainings and tools. So, and the mindful music is super duper easy. It's a real turnkey system. It's affordable and or fundable, and we work with our schools on that. We try to make it really, we want to make it so that there's almost no, that it's all a yes. There's a lot of ease in the process.
Yeah, I just love what I see, love the impact it's having on students and also on teachers and administrators, really on the school culture as a whole. So I would definitely encourage everyone listening to go and check that out. Stacy, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. This conversation has been fantastic. I feel like I am in a more settled, grounded, connected place here at the end of it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a true pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for kicking off the year with Off the Assembly Line. You can find episode details in the show notes and additional resources at offtheassemblyline.co. If you want to level up this year and do it with a talented and generous learning community, the Teacher Mastermind might be the next step you're looking for. Go to teachermastermind.com for more info or shoot me an email at rebecca@teachermastermind.com. Off the Assembly Line is produced by me, Rebecca Reed, with many thanks to our incredible guests. If you like what you heard, be sure to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on. Until next week, pause, find your breath, and then go make a ruckus.